Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the HCG. This is your host, Melissa Bilardi. Stay tuned. We're going to have some music. I'm going to introduce an incredible special guest. Frances Saldana is on with us today. And enjoy. We'll talk to you in a second. Here we go. Calling numbers today are 310-982-4227. And press 1 when you call in. My producer, JV, James, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about the HDView program and click follow on our show page. Today we have an incredible special guest. She's a fascinating personality and a true HD hero, an angel, HD warrior, I think, too. Frances Saldana is Advocacy Chairman for the HDSA Orange County Chapter in California, Patient Advocacy Committee Member with the Sue and Bill Gross Stem Cell Research Center at UC Irvine, and she was also a keynote speaker at the World Symposium of the Huntington Study Group in October this year. And I welcome Frances Saldana. How are you today?
Hi, Melissa. Well, I'm hanging in there, and thank you for inviting me to your show.
You're welcome. So happy to have you here.
Thank
and
you.
I do want to give you my heartfelt condolences for the passing of your daughter.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I know you have bronchitis today, so I'll try to be gentle with you. So tell us, Frances, when did the HD journey actually start for you?
Well, it started a little over 30 years ago. The father of my children started demonstrating symptoms that we now know were beginning signs of Huntington's disease. We didn't know much about Huntington's at the time, so you can imagine it was a very confusing and challenging time for us. But
that was before the gene was identified. So
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in the late 80s or so.
So how did they diagnose back then? Did they do a neurologic or?
Well, you know, he had a lot of problems with his balance and also a lot of cognition problems, and they were noticeable at that time. Wasn't able to keep a job and was falling. So we finally decided to take him to a neurologist, and he couldn't figure it out. But then it occurred to me to mention that his mother had been in the hospital for what they thought was a disease of an unknown nature. This is what they said in her death certificate. And they were very secretive about it, so it really, there was not much known about Huntington's. But when I mentioned the symptoms that I had heard his mother had, and if there might be a chance that he could have that,
mm-hmm.
There was no question about it. He continued to do a few tests and was soon after able to diagnose him with Huntington's disease.
Mm-hmm. Families probably knew back then that there was something amiss, but didn't really know what it was, right?
Well, you know, I had heard that there was a genetic disease in his family. So when we became engaged, I asked him if this was true, that it was genetic and there might be a chance that he might inherit this disease. And he said, "No, honey, my mother's doctor said that what she had, I have one in a million chances of inheriting it." So they may have known a little bit more than what they told me, but, you know, there's no use worrying about that now. We just move forward.
Right. Well, tell us what has given you the courage to become such an advocacy and warrior for HD, for stem cell research.
Well, you know, for one, you lose your loved one when they completely change the way they were before they became sick to the end stages. So, you know, I think it's what gives people, families, the courage to continue with our fight is, I guess, love for our family, because I think love overpowers any fear or sense of devastation and loss. It's, you just have to keep fighting for them and fighting to educate people about just what the disease is, so that they are not misunderstood, so that they are treated with respect and kindness and dignity. I think that's what triggers it. After that, you realize that there are other avenues that you can take in public policy and advocacy to speak up and be a voice for your loved ones. But it all starts at home. What you feel for your family, the love, the tenderness you feel for your family, you want everybody to treat your loved one that way. And then you just become a voice for them. And there are a lot of opportunities to be an advocate for HD families, because then it extends not just from your own family, but also to the other families that you get to know through your advocacy work. And what we try to advocate for is for the best care possible, not from the time that they become symptomatic, but from the time that they learn that they are at risk,
mm-hmm.
and then to the onset of Huntington's symptoms, and then ultimately to end-of-life care. And that's not just for the patient, but also for the families and caregivers as well, because HD is a family disease.
Yes, it is. Well, tell us about the project Lifting the Veil of Huntington's Disease. Now, how did that come about?
Oh, yeah, that was a wonderful project that a peer group, we were invited by the Huntington's Disease Society of America and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. This was a project that started in 2001, and it was through the a program called Promoting Excellence at End of Life, and it's a national program. Huntington's disease is one of the, I think it was five diseases that were targeted to form a peer group and try to compose a report and that would give recommendations on promoting excellence at end of life. And what we did was, this project took 2 years. It was finally published in 2003. We split up into three groups, and there were 16 of us. They were all medical people except for myself. I represented the caregiver. And the three groups were the palliative care group, the research group, and the public policy group. And what I could offer in my subcommittee was promoting meaningful social interaction for HD patients, communication and care. Those were things that I thought were important. At that time, it was almost like doing my homework in advance before I really needed to apply that for my daughter, who would become so disabled that she would need total care. That was in 2003. So by the time she became sick, it's like I had already done my homework. So that was very beneficial to me.
Mm-hmm.
That that report is still online. You can still access it through.
I found that actually.
Yeah.
And I've actually downloaded it because I think it's very well written and well done. I wanted to ask you specifically about palliative care because a couple months ago I inquired here in my area on the Central Coast about palliative care, and it was as though I was asking for them to go to the moon. It was as though, first of all, the nurse that we have at the county didn't even know what palliative care was, which I was very surprised because she was an experienced nurse. And then I ended up calling the hospital, and they said they only do palliative care for people who are on hospice or in the hospital. So how do you go about getting a palliative care program organized for our HDRs?
Okay, well, what I did, because there was really nothing here in Orange County at the time, to get any expertise or to go to any doctors who had expertise in Huntington's, our patients had to go either to L.A. or San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started talking to Dr. Hermanowitz at the University of California at Irvine, and to Leslie Thompson and Larry Marsh, who were other HD researchers, and also to social workers through the Caregiver Resource Center, Karen Little. And we all met with the assistant dean at the College of Medicine, UC Irvine, started talking to him about our needs, our unmet needs for HD families, and how little was known about their needs when you took them to a general practitioner. So little by little, we're able to convince the Dr. Lott to have a clinic for Huntington's at the Gottschalk Medical Plaza at UC Irvine.
Mm.
So then it's like it's continuing work. It doesn't end just there because everywhere you go, you almost like when Marie was admitted to a care home, I needed to educate the staff there and the medical staff and the CNAs, the certified nurses aides. On Huntington, so what I did was invite Yvette Bordelon, the neurologist from UCLA.
Yes, Yvette Bordelon.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara Fallick, a social worker from UCLA, to come and give an in-service.
Another great person.
they did it so willingly and so wonderfully. It's just wonderful. And they've done it several times. Any time that I feel that a staff needs to be educated, they come and they talk, and I'm telling you, it makes a world of difference.
It does.
So in a way, you're teaching the staff, the medical staff, palliative care
and
the special needs of our HD families. So it's just...
That's a great way to do it.
I'm sorry?
That's a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the quickest way is contact one of the centers of excellence, and they're all listed on the website.
Right.
And start talking to them, and if there isn't one, a center of excellence close by, bring a member of that center of excellence to a medical center in your area and start talking.
I wonder if, maybe the regional person could come?
Absolutely. I'm sure.
Because we are nowhere near a center of excellence, unfortunately. We're right on the Central Coast between Santa Barbara and San Luis, so the closest is UCLA South, and north is the closest is UC Davis, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We're like kind of out in the middle of nowhere right now, but we have lots of work to do for HDRs here on the Central Coast because we have a lot of families that haven't reached yet. So I know there's a lot of advocacy work to do, a lot of education to do, and it just baby steps takes time, and you have to reach out, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
But tell us about your advocacy committee work that you're doing at the Sue and Bill Gross Stem Cell Research Center. You're a patient advocacy committee.
Well, I don't know if you recall back in 2004 when in California we voted for Proposition 71.
Yeah.
That was a $3.5 billion bond. For stem cell research. When that happened, the Stem Cell Research Center at UC Irvine decided to form an advocacy committee. So they asked the presidents of each one of the diseases that they are targeting, mm-hmm. which at the time included five, to form their patient advocacy committee. So we work together whenever there's an opportunity to speak on behalf of stem cell research. We're there. 2 weeks ago, we attended the World Stem Cell Summit in Pasadena, mm-hmm. which was wonderful. And when that happens, and there's talk about clinical trials, there's talk about funding, there's talk about ethics, there's talk about just a lot of different topics. That's your opportunity when they open it up to the audience to take the mic. That's your opportunity to get up there and talk and tell them how Huntington's disease for our families is our 9/11 mm-hmm. with a terrorist disease attacking, and we never know when it's going to happen and who. All we know that is that our families are dying. So there is an urgency. There is an urgency because Huntington's is not something that's going to go away when our loved one passes. It continues on to the next generation. And with all the knowledge that the researchers have worldwide, they really need to collaborate, share their knowledge, and ultimately just end this devastating disease. Just end it, because we really want to make this the last generation of Huntington's disease.
Oh, boy. That is a great mantra for advocating stem cell research, because it seems as though that is what's going to give us the cure, don't you think?
I hope so. You know, I always thought back in 2000 when I started the movement here in Orange County that we'd have the cure or treatment in 2 years. And then when the 2 years were up, I said, okay, we'll have it in 2 more years. Okay. And then as my daughter started declining, I thought, it's not going to be here in time for her.
So sorry.
And then I thought, okay, there's still time for Margie and Michael, but, you know, I have to be realistic. There's not enough time for them. But I do have two beautiful grandchildren.
Let's not give up hope.
Exactly.
But
right. I have two beautiful grandchildren who will definitely not have to worry about Huntington's disease. And I truly feel that it's going to be here in time for them.
We're counting on
that,
right?
I feel very strongly about that.
Well, listen, I would like to introduce one of your sidekicks. His name is Keith Westerfield, and he is with the HDSAOC board as well. Keith, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Good. Thank you very much, Melissa.
I'm so happy to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with HD, and why are you doing what you're doing?
Well, my wife and I have been married for 39 years. We were married in 1972. Our son was born in 74, and our daughter was born in 78. And in 1980, we learned that her father, my wife's father, had been diagnosed with Huntington's disease mm-hmm. and died the following year at age 62. Mm-hmm. So we put that in the back of our minds, having met with the doctors at USC in 1981, that there was a 50-50 chance that she and her four-year younger brother could have the gene and could have HD as they got older. Nothing happened in her 30s, her 40s, but about, she's 61 and a half today. About 3-plus years ago, I started noticing symptoms because of the internet and the knowledge that we have today. I've been going behind her back and studying HD and looking for the traits and whatnot. And,
that's what we do, huh?
And when I saw it occurring, I didn't want to share with her, but I was 50-50 in my thought process that she might have the gene starting to become active. She started having difficulty at work about 2 years ago, She actually worked in the medical industry. She had trouble functioning. January of last year, 2010, we went to a neurologist in Southern California who was a pretty good neurologist but didn't know much about Huntington's disease. He suggested that we go to USC, which is my alma mater, and we went to a wonderful doctor at USC that did a test on her and was conclusive that she had it. But we wanted to have the genetic blood test done, and we had that done. And it was acknowledged that June of last year she had Huntington's disease. We advised our two children, and they have each had three children of their own. Our son is having his fourth in about 3 weeks. So we have nearly seven grandchildren who, as everyone knows, are also at risk, as well as our children. My wife had to resign from her job about 8 weeks after being diagnosed. She just couldn't continue functioning. In January of this year, the physician told us that she really shouldn't be driving her car. So she, at age, just having turned 61, lost the privilege of being able to drive to the store and run errands and do daily functions. And I would say she'll be 62 in November. She's in the mid stages of the disease. We got involved because of my daughter's tenacity in the Orange County Walk for Hope, September of last year. And we mounted quite a great cadre of friends and family that came out and walked and raised money. And the president of our Orange County chapter, E.J. Garner, subsequently contacted me and asked me to attend a meeting. Well, I knew what that meant. You want to join our board. So last October, I joined the OC board and met the likes of Francis Saldana and E.J. Garner and Ted Krull and other folks on the board who have issues like Francis and are dedicated to helping for the future.
Great.
My kids both joined the board in January and February of this year and have become also committed to do the best they can in helping to find the cure through advocacy and fundraising to either help them or help their children.
That's great.
So our family is 150% committed to finding the cure.
Yes, I think all of us here tonight are on the same branch there with you. We're getting ready to break here for some quick music, and then we're going to come back with a panel. We're going to discuss some questions that we've put forward and our HD community has given to us. So here's a break, and we'll be right back with you. Thanks, Keith and Francis.
Francis, you still okay?
Go ahead and get blown. Call up that chick wanted to think I was putting you out for, because you were untrue, rolling around in the car that I bought you. Baby, drop them keys, hurry up before your taxi leaves. Standing in the front yard telling me how I'm such a fool, talking about I'll never ever find a man like have another you in a minute. Matter of fact, he'll be in a minute, baby.
Hello, we're back and have a couple announcements for everybody. You're listening to the HD View with Frances Saldana. We have an awesome panel of people waiting to answer questions, but first I want to give you some show dates coming up. October 21st, Help for HD. Actually, strike that, the HD View with Dr. LaVon Goodman. We're going to talk about the algorithms that she's done for treatment and treatment guidelines. Also on October 31st, we have Halloween for HD. That's going to be fun. We need your ghost stories and paranormal stories. So send them to helpforhd@yahoo.com or put them on the HD View on Facebook. And on November 7, we have no show at this time, but that may change. November 14, the JHD View. We have an open panel. 21st, the HD View, open panel. 28th, Help for HD with Katie Jackson. That may change the format as well. She is author of Ferris Wheel. James, take it away. You have some announcements for us as well.
Yes, something very, very exciting. We are about to release an actual application to the iTunes and Android market very soon. We don't have an estimated date just yet, but it is extremely exciting. The application, like I said, will be available for iTunes download and Android market download. It's going to be called Help for HD, and it will be filled with many resources, information, and support. The application is has been in the making for quite some time, and we can't wait to have it available. And it definitely will be free, and it'll have quite a few components within the application to help the JHD and HD community as well as the caregivers. So that's really exciting. Also, we are excited to mention that the Shalimar has just released additional lines of merchandise for the film and for Christmas. Their products are fantastic. They look beautiful. So please be sure to visit theshalimar.org and click on store and see what they have offering.
Also, real quick, too, just want to mention Dr. LaVon Goodman has been gracious to let us post her on the website. And her algorithm download in PDF format is available on wehaveaface.org. Go to the Help for HD button, and if you click on that tab, you'll see Dr. LaVon Goodman right there on the page. Click on that link, and you can download these treatment guides and algorithms. They're in a flowchart format, amazing information to help our physicians and our HD caregivers. So anything else that you can think of?
No, that's it for right now, but there's a lot coming down the pike.
Okay, now I just want to say thank you to Frances and Keith for coming on the show with us today. We are going to have a panel discussion now, and I want to mention that none of us are medical professionals or clinicians. So, you know, this discussion is merely among fellow HD community members. We do get questions from the HD community, and it's merely a discussion. And please, if there's any question whatsoever, you must contact your medical professionals and do what they tell you, because we are only just having a discussion. So our panel tonight is, of course, James Valvano. He's my producer. We have Frances Saldana, Keith Westerfield, Jonathan Munkmeyer, Sue Wright from UK. Crystal is not here with us today. Cindy is with us from Oklahoma. And welcome, everyone, to the HD View.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hello, hello.
Could I mention something, Melissa?
Certainly,
about
Sue.
The algorithms.
Yes.
If anybody wants to read more about how they, you know, these works that went into producing them, if they go to the PLOS website, PLOS Currents, Huntington's disease, that's capital P, capital L, lowercase o, capital S, Currents, Huntington's disease, and the articles are there, including the download algorithms.
Perfect. Thank you, Sue. Well, Frances, can you take the first question for us tonight?
Sure.
Okay, this is kind of it's a hard question, but it's also kind of an easy question. We had a person ask, it makes me sad that there are so many stigmas with this disease. How can we help get rid of these stigmas in the community?
Oh, my gosh, that is a big problem, not just with the community, but also with care homes who will turn your loved one away once they hear that, once you tell them that your loved one has Huntington's, they somehow don't have a bed available, or they won't take a young person, or they cannot, they're not able to care for the patient with the amount of care that they require. But I'm telling you, you have to be the head cheerleader for the HD patient, and you need to insist on educating key people that the HD patient interacts with about what is happening to them. You have to instill in them empathy for a person who is actually dying. Cancer patients, leukemia patients, and other disease patients are treated with dignity because people understand the nature of the disease. And enough publicity and media coverage has been given to it. But with Huntington's, I mean, we really need to work overtime because it's been kept a secret for so long by HD families themselves because they themselves were not educated about what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So because the HD symptoms resemble intoxication and their cognitive behavior is impaired, people quickly run away. Including care homes and even sometimes even the families themselves. So a clear understanding that the patient, through no fault of their own, inherited this mutant protein and is slowly dying from the damage that's being caused in the brain, that will make a big difference. And you need to be the role model. You need to be the one who sets the example to everybody that your loved one comes in contact with, on the way you treat them, the respect you have for them, treat them with dignity, and insist that everybody else does too, the care that you give them, the attention that you give them. You need to be the role model and the cheerleader, and you know what? Other people will follow. Other people will do the same.
Good point.
It's often very helpful also to show them photos of your loved one, the way they were when they were fully capable and before the symptoms started kicking in, and how they contributed to your life and the life around them. Show them photos so they can see.
Yes, because the progression shows in the photos.
Mm-hmm.
It's very visual progression.
I mean, a perfect example is Michael J. Fox. I mean, we all loved him. You know, we knew him as he was growing up. And to see the devastation that Parkinson's has caused on him, I mean, of course, it's just heart-wrenching to see. And you truly understand and have compassion and want to do something to help to find a cure for that disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. There's so many stigmas surrounding it, too. Well, we're gonna have some music here for a second, and we'll take another question. Thank you, Frances.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. There we go.
Every now and then I get a little bit lonely, and you're never coming around. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my dear. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your eyes.
Turn around.
Every now and then I fall apart.
nothing I can do. A total eclipse of the heart.
Okay, we're going to have a panel discussion here, and James is going to bring on a couple more people here from the panel, and he's going to read to us his question. We had a DMV question, and actually Keith, our incredible special guest Keith here today, kind of touched on that question. So James, you want to go ahead and read that for
sure.
us?
Sure, this question came in. I would like to ask you a question. My son was just diagnosed with HD. I think he is taking it better than I am. But anyways, I was wondering if I got one of those flyers to the police department, would they then in turn let the DMV know he has it, HD? Right now he can drive without problems, but I don't want the DMV to automatically pull his license. He needs it to get to back and forth to work. Thanks and have a great day.
So, Keith, do you have any comment on that particular question?
Oh, yes. First, there's the humane and the legal aspect, so to speak, that if the son has been diagnosed and there is a medical file in his personal records that he has HD and he drives the car carefully to work and ends up in an accident, the family would be liable for any accident that might be incurred that they or good attorneys would put on him. If there's been a doctor's evaluation done, like my wife had a neurologist evaluate her and make the recommendation that she really shouldn't drive, which ended up in her medical file, we took that and went to the DMV and tried to get a test. And the California DMV would not test her. We made the conscious decision based on the doctor's medical report that really is private but really can become public knowledge. We made the conscious decision for her just to stop driving.
Yeah, that makes sense because you don't want her to be hurt, but you also don't want other people to be injured.
Don't want your loved one to be hurt, but you don't want your loved one to accidentally hurt somebody else.
Right.
And it's purely accidental, but your involuntary movements and your reaction time is affected by Huntington's disease.
Right.
In the United Kingdom, it's the DVLA who issue driving licenses, and you are obliged to disclose any medical condition that could affect your driving, and obviously Huntington's disease is one, and then you are medically assessed, and certainly they can accommodate some of the problems for some of the time, but yes, they all end up.
I just had a chat come up. Judy Robertson from Sacramento is posting, Jean Miller used to post wallet card HD information that explains that people with HD look intoxicated. So that's a good idea, too. Before we go to the next question, I do want to make a, we had another person call, chat, a question, Lisa. She says, can you talk about HD affects speech and how that can be confusing to police or other officials as being drunk? And Sue from the UK, I know you're an expert with speech, and maybe you can address that in your area, and then somebody from our neck of the woods could also address that.
Right. Well, HD affects both the physical aspect of speech, the ability to articulate the sound, but it also affects the language aspect of communication. So, and obviously it's progressive. So at first you'll have minimal problems, but as time goes by, it gets much more difficult. One of the issues is that even though the person has considerable difficulty speaking, their understanding is actually pretty intact.
Right.
They may need conversation to be slower and more focused, but it's not like the other dementias or when you've had a stroke where you just can't process the information. It's going in, it's just slow to be processed. But yes, it's in children, unfortunately, speech goes very rapidly because the ability to articulate is so severely impaired. And obviously the younger they are, they're still learning language whilst it's being stripped away from them as well.
Right.
And one of the good things, if I can interject, one of the good things about there's obviously, we all know that there are many flavors of the ID cards that are out there. That also comes in hand because when an individual in that situation who, like Sue said, can cognitively understand but have a hard time communicating, that the card that we're offering, and I know there are many other cards that are out there, just like one of the listeners stated, that it does specify that certain progressions of the disease will have a direct outcome on your speech. So, you know, hopefully if people were printing out the cards more, regardless of what card they are, that they actually have that on there. So it just assists the law enforcement 10 times better.
Something that my
or
mother,
anybody, I mean,
something that my mother brought up the other day. We were looking at the ID cards on our web page. We have a face.org, and she said, "What about like the alert, emergency alert buttons that you wear on a necklace or an ID bracelet, something to that?"
That's a good idea.
Might be a good idea.
My mother, when she was in her late stages, had one of those, and she had it wrapped around her neck, and she had her hand on it all the time just because of her falling constantly and stumbling. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Keith, did you have any experience with that in dealing with the police as well, with your loved one appearing to be intoxicated?
My mother?
Keith.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My wife hasn't gotten to the position of really showing the intoxication factors. She has some difficulty walking now. She uses a cane. I think the cane shows other people that she has some sort of a disability, but she hasn't been concerned or called out as being intoxicated. She, on the other hand, used to enjoy a glass of wine with dinner. She has stopped having a glass of wine because it just adds to her shakiness. So she's alcohol-free now.
You know, can I add something real quick?
Oh, please.
Yeah. My daughter Margie had a terrible experience when she went to register her son for kindergarten. She was turned away, and the security officer came after her and asked her if she was intoxicated. She pulled out a note from her neurologist saying, which she always carried with her, saying that she could still drive. He ignored her and called the police, and, of course, all the staff and everybody surrounding her, and the children started crying, my two grandchildren. It was a terrible experience, and if you want to click on to the CIRM website, in 2007 she made that presentation at the CIRM meeting, and you'll see her if you just click on videos, 2007.
Okay.
Marguerite Hayes, and she tells a story, and it's something she's never forgotten.
Wow.
It was very humiliating for her, and
it is.
Yeah.
It's
terrifying for the children.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, John, are you with us?
Yeah. It's excuse me.
Have you had any experience with that as well?
I think it's really difficult because society is so closed to everyone acting 100% sort of normal. And my experiences with my wife were that kindness is not always given. And I was always with her, which certainly would help. But even my voice wasn't enough to... at one point, she was held in a jail cell for 2 hours until an ambulance took her away for an evaluation. And I really had no say in the matter, even though I was her husband and I was present with her. And I think authorities tend to like to be in authority position, and they don't always understand these sort of things. So it's just one of those things you have to live with and recognize that you're not the only one in the Huntington's community. It's pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, see, this is where it's important to be a voice for your HD community, because I talked about it at the convention in Texas shortly after that. And, oh, my gosh, this is like 10 years ago already. And there was a gentleman in the audience who happened to be a police officer from Las Vegas. So he stood up and offered to come and do a training for the police department in Tustin, where my daughter lives, and gave them a very thorough training on Huntington's. And anytime they saw my daughter at the store or driving, they just kind of waved to her because they understood she was okay. But then after a year or so, my son-in-law decided it was time to just, you know, not allow her to drive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's just educating the public, law enforcement, and advocating for your families.
Yeah, we get used to it because, hey, we're around it all the time, and the rest of the world isn't as used to it, and sometimes we forget that. And
yeah,
you just have to remember that making that bridge to bring people together is our job as a caregiver. And most people really care and really want to be inclusive, and especially when others are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Great conversations. Hey, Jane, we have a question for regarding siblings for Cindy. I think we wanted to have her address this question. Can you read it to
us? We sure do. And I guess that each and every one of us can actually speak to this. How do you convince a sibling that they are no longer able to give our mother, who has HD, the full-time attention she needs? This is frustrating, and trying so hard not to let HD cause a rift between us. It's very delicate, too, because we all have our experiences with this. So that was a great question.
It is. I have two other siblings that were taking care of my mother at different stages in her Huntington's. The older sister had a drug problem, but also was having the HD movements. I had to go to the courts and get, what is it called, guardianship over my mother, the DPOA, from both of my sisters.
Wow.
It did cause a rift for a little bit, but it was in my mother's best interest because she was walking out of the house, falling in the middle of a public street, in the middle of intersections, you know, hurting herself. She would walk up into a store and slap somebody, you know, that kind of behaviors. That's how I had to do it. I had to just go to the court system and put her into a facility that would take her for her best care.
Right.
Sometimes that HD rift is going to be there for a while. Ours, my mother's last dying wish was for all of her kids to get along. There's four of us. And we did. After I did that, after I took control, they seen that it was for my mom's best interest to go ahead and go into the facility. We all got along. We got along better. And then, you know, she shortly died after that, and we still get along. So it's different for each family, but that's how I had to do for our family.
And wouldn't you also say that, you know, from sibling to sibling, it's always best to be as open and try to communicate on every level. And sometimes, you know, communication. And it's probably best to get it out in the open, obviously away from the individual who is suffering from HD, but to actually sometimes to really get it out, you know, you've got to do that.
Yeah, because I had to take my mom away from their situation or their home, you know, one day, went and got a cheeseburger at McDonald's, and I just told her that, Mom, I think it's time. Do you trust me? That's all I had to say to her. Mom, do you trust me? Do you trust what I'm telling you? And she would say, yeah. And I said, well, I think that it's time that we're going to have to move away from, you know, this house and go into the facilities. And she would just, you know, she would cry at that point. But, yeah, you have to do whatever you can do.
It's a difficult
and like you
situation.
Said, once that was done, then everybody started to get along a little bit easier, and that's something we also had to do to make the decision to put my brother John into a group home, because it was getting very hard for my parents. And now being in the group home, he is getting daily activities. He's going out. There's a lot of
crazy.
And then we see him 4 days of the week, and everybody's getting along easier. So, like you said from the beginning, each of us has a different way, you know. We all are touched by the same concept, but we all deal with it differently.
Right. Yes.
Does anybody else have any comment on the sibling question?
Well, the only thing I was thinking is it's to do with issues of guilt as well, obviously.
Right.
That when the children are trying to return the favor of looking after the parent when they become ill, if they feel, you know, that somebody's saying they're not capable of doing it, they feel guilty that they've let the person down. So it's trying to overcome that and say, nobody on this planet can provide 100%
right.
of the care for that individual. So it's just finding which system works best for that family member.
Yes. See, that's very true. My older sister, who had her beginning middle stages, was HD positive, and my younger sister, who was negative, had her in the late stages. So you're very right.
Hey,
then
John.
There was me.
Are you with us, John?
Yeah. Yes.
Did your wife have siblings?
She has two brothers, and I think that it's difficult for them to explore Huntington. So we had not spent that much time with them. We've gone on camping trips, things like that as well. But I think one thing that's interesting is, we deal with Huntington's disease as caregivers. We see the problems that crop up. And when those problems crop up, there are ways of addressing them. And I found just supplements helped my wife out. And the issues of her not understanding things and looking at things in that Huntington sort of way would go by the wayside if I could properly treat her with the right supplements, TLC, and the environment that enabled her to cope with her disease. And I think that's one of our goals as caregivers, is to minimize the horrible experiences that our family members have. And Dr. Goodman's going to be on the show shortly, in a week or so. And the information that she presents to all of us, I don't think should be taken lightly. I believe that my wife did not remain in that horrible shaking state of fogginess because I was giving her B-complex and other supplements. And these things, to me, are really important. Although the science may not be there with the, you know, clinical trials to prove everything out, it certainly seemed to me, from observing the things that were done, that these issues are things that we need to really look at as caregivers, because our lives are much, much better off when the family members we're taking care of are able to cope with this disease, because that's our challenge. And
yeah,
I just feel that all these issues are really important that we're discussing, because we all have to deal with them. But they are signs and symptoms of what's going on, and I am just hoping that as a community we come together and share the stories of what makes the difference, so that we don't all fall into the horribleness of Huntington's as deeply as has been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Francis,
yes.
Did you have anything to say about the siblings? As I know, you know, your family's so
well,
tight.
Well, no, actually, it's been my children. So, no, I don't think there was any feeling that, like, that Marie shouldn't have gone to a care home, because
uh-huh.
it was impossible for me to continue taking care of her. You know, it was just too difficult. And plus, I saw her every day. Sometimes I stopped before work to see her, and then I went and gave her lunch and broke away from work to give her lunch, and then went after work, and like 3 days out of the week I'd bring her home, and she'd spend the weekends here. We did that for a couple of years until she was just too sick.
Yeah.
But one thing that I would like to add regarding the supplements, absolutely, I consider LaVon Goodman one of my dearest friends and friend
mm-hmm.
of HD families, and I gave Marie all the supplements that are recommended on HD Drug Works,
mm-hmm.
and my little Marie was, her mind was clear, she was never confused, she was all there, even the night before she passed away, she sang some of her favorite songs with me. She couldn't talk, but her lips were moving, singing the YMCA songs that she would teach her kids at summer camp. She was a YMCA camp counselor.
Aww.
And she was smiling, and she was singing
That's
on
nice.
Top of Old Smokey. And, I mean, her mind was clear, but I gave her all the supplements. Whether they worked or not, I didn't know. I was going to give them to her anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Margie does not take them diligently. You need somebody to really give them to them routinely all the time. And Michael, you know, he takes the CoQ10 and he takes the blueberry extract and the creatine.
Great.
But Marie, she took everything, and she, her cognition, I don't think, ever declined. She was happy. She was a happy child.
And my wife stopped a lot of her symptoms, and she was walking up until 2 months before she died. She walked 2 hours through a garden and just really enjoyed everything, and looked a lot better than she did when she didn't have supplements. And it really does improve their quality of life, in my opinion.
Hey, listen, we're getting ready to go off the live portion of the show, so I want to thank all of our listeners out there. We have quite a list of listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your questions. If we didn't get a chance to answer them, we will try to answer them on the next program. And thanks for tuning in to the HD View. Thank you, Francis, and
thank you.
Keith. We're off. Can you believe that?
Already, huh?
Yeah. We're still recording.
Can you picture the dream of a camcorder, an ocean of violet and bloom, animals strike curious poses, they feel the heat between me and you, just leave me standing, alone in a world that's so cold, maybe I'm just too demanding, maybe I'm just
Okay, we're back. We're going to go into a couple more questions maybe, and then I think we'll sign off for tonight. That was a great show. I want to thank Francis and Keith for joining us today. We had a great conversation with them. James, did you want to ask a couple more questions?
Sure. I have one that is it's quite sensitive. Here it goes. I am a caregiver of my wife who has Huntington's disease. We have a sexual relationship, but I sometimes feel strange, like I don't want to feel like I am taking advantage of her. She says I am not, but is it normal to feel like this? I just love her so much. Very, very sensitive subject, but there are many people that are out there that are thinking that.
All right. Who wants to take this one?
I can take that.
Okay.
I feel that if a wife is still interested in having an intimate relationship with her husband, why would he deny her of that? And, I mean, I feel that this is one of the truest expressions of love that a husband can have for his wife. And, I mean, the patient has everything else taken away from them, employment, driving, going shopping on their own, and many other activities. And then to deny them this expression of love from her husband, I think that would be heartbreaking.
Uh-huh.
I think one thing I would strongly recommend is that they use very safe birth control. And also to be very careful if she's at the late stages of Huntington's where, you know, he might hurt her. He would have to take extra precautions not to to hurt her physically if she's already, you know, if her muscles and joints are already starting to deteriorate, he needs to be a little more careful. I mean, I just think of that, remember that movie Love Story with Ryan O'Neal and Ally McGraw?
Yes.
And then when she was dying, what did she ask him to do? Please, you know, she said, please, you know, to come into her bed. And he just laid there and hugged her, embraced her, and then she died.
Well, I know we've had this question throughout the groups within Facebook. We've had quite a few people ask similar related questions to this. And, of course, each and every one of them, I think, will benefit from your response. I think that was a great response. I'd like to
Could I also add that obviously is that as the disease progresses, I think the relationship changes, the status of the relationship from sort of husband and wife to a caregiver and a person receiving care. And that's where the mismatch comes in, I think, so that the caregiver can feel as though they are abusing the person because they are having to provide for them, and maybe they can feel a sexual relationship is taking advantage. But as long as the person with HD is giving consent, certainly provide sexual satisfaction however you can. It needn't be full penetrative intercourse. There are other options available.
Absolutely.
That's true. Yes.
Absolutely. Does anybody else wish to add to that?
I just agree with you and Francis.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question. This is a question that I've seen quite often. When I take my son into the community to the movies or to dinner with my family, so many people stare. It drives me crazy, and sometimes I want to scream at them. He is 19, and some people look at him like he is like he's on something or he's drunk. This breaks my heart every time. And that kind of goes back to what you were speaking about, Francis, before regarding the stigma.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I've done, I always carry pamphlets about HD facts at a glance, always. And if I get the opportunity to give them a pamphlet, I will. But if I feel that the situation or the it's going to cause more embarrassment to my kids than it's worth. What I have done through the years, I have created my own events and parties for my children. and brought people to them that I know love them and understand them. One of the greatest things we have is our annual Walk for the Cure. No one is going to judge them there. They love that. They love going that. Unfortunately, this year my two children were just too sick to go. It's the first year that they've missed it. We have the annual Bowl-a-thon. We've got something new now, Saturday at the movies, Saturday morning at the movies for HD families. And then parties. I mean, I have parties for my daughter at her home to celebrate anything, her children's birthdays, her birthday, her Valentine's, Halloween. You know, it's at her home where it's a safe environment where no one is going to be making her feel uncomfortable or just embarrassed or anything. But what I do, you know, if I have to take her somewhere else where people are not familiar, I just carry myself with pride, and I focus on my children. I focus on them, and if for some reason someone looks like they're curious or interested, I'll hand them a fax at a glance.
Yeah, it's always good to have that information with you wherever you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I designed those little credit card size show you care by being aware with the key facts of Huntington's on the back. I always have those to hand out to people.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get those, Sue?
Through me, basically, because I only designed this and had a short number printed as a trial. So,
are they like a credit card?
It's the size of a credit card, and the front is Show You Care by Being Aware, and the back has a very brief description of Huntington.
All righty. Well, James, do we have one more question?
Yeah, another sensitive question.
Okay.
We lose loved ones from this disease. My friend's son committed suicide last year, and I'm wondering if this has ever been addressed. Will you be talking about this in the film? Thank you for everything. From the end, yes, suicide is definitely a topic that we wish to address in the film with medical professionals. And Sue, remember you and I had discussed this a while ago, and I know that there is a report out there regarding the statistics within the HD community regarding suicide. I know you may not have that with you, but do you want to brush on that for a moment?
Well, certainly my understanding previously was that the suicide rate in Huntington's families was something like 6 or 7% higher than normal. But in fact, the more recent research suggests it's up to 200% higher
than
in the normal population.
Oh. Wow.
So we all have to be very aware of the suicide risk and take any threat of committing suicide seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, of course, there are medications where the side effects can lead to suicidal ideation, so you need to be aware of that as well when people are put on certain drugs. But yes, you've got to take it very seriously and talk about it openly again. It's not, I personally can actually understand why a person would feel suicide is the preferred option. But if we can talk to them about quality of life that they may miss out on, hopefully they will learn to value themselves and change their minds.
Go ahead, John.
I'm sorry. People's values are so much dependent on their interactions with everyone else, and it's tough when you're treated poorly with Huntington's disease. So putting someone in favorable situations, my wife had the best time when we went to our local HDSA chapter, had a camp that everyone else there had Huntington's, and she just experienced the camaraderie and the love, and those things are so important and vital to everyone's lives. And our whole families basically do receive a lot of social shunning from the world. And we just have to say, well, that's their loss. And the good thing about it is you find nice people in the world that don't do that. And so you end up actually interacting with the nicer people that are out there. We went from a more conservative type of churches to one that was very open, and my wife fit right in. And across all types of communities out there, everyone needs to be loved and appreciated. And suicide, I think, generally comes from people feeling they've lost their worth. And people with Huntington's have not lost their worth. They teach us what love's about. They teach us why we're alive. And they make us realize that life is not about all the possessions and the silly things and the entrapment that the whole world seems to be following. So I think that everyone who has this disease should realize that and value their life for what it is and value the fact that we in the community all love each other and really care for all of each other as much as we possibly can.
That's a really good point, Jonathan.
And, oh, man, Jonathan.
With that said, I just want to close the show now, and I want to thank Francis and Keith, especially, for a wonderful presentation and a very good conversation that we've had today. I think a lot of people will benefit from it. Thank you, James. Thank you,
no
Cindy. Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome.
And tune in next week, same time, same place. Dr. LaVon Goodman will be on. And y'all have a great night. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.